Hello and welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler. Today we discuss the Global Information Technology Report. What is the methodology behind it? Why do we need it? And what exactly is it about? We hear from one of the authors and those who have an interest in the findings. Also in today's podcast, we mark World Health Day, which is this Saturday, and we have a chat with our very own health expert, Dr. Olivier Renault, on this year's theme, which affects us all, aging and health. We begin today's program with Sumitra Dutta, professor of business and technology at INSEAD. He has contributed to the Global Information Technology Report and explains how and why it was launched.
Well, about a decade ago, when technology started becoming very important for development and competitiveness, we realized that there wasn't really a conceptual anchor for thinkers and leaders in this area. So we came up with a model and a framework which is called the Networked Readiness Index Framework. And this framework really provides a conceptual anchor for looking at technology's role in enhancing development and competitiveness in an economy. The framework consists of the overall environment in which technology is applied in an economy, and also looks at the role of the three major actors, individuals, businesses, and government. It assesses the degree to which the three actors are ready and also looks at the usage of these technology by these three actors. We try to measure the different elements of the framework linked to the overall environment of the country, the readiness and usage of technology by the three actors, and we try to come up with an overall measure of network readiness, which is an assessment of the economy's ability to use and leverage technology for competitiveness and development. If you look at some of the factors in the environment, we look at the macroeconomic stability of the country, we look at the strength of the regulatory framework in the country, we look at aspects linked to the ease of starting businesses with technology, and we overall consider the ease of using technology inside the economy by the different actors. And then for the different actors, the individuals, businesses and governments, we consider factors like the mobile adoption, the cellular phone adoption. We consider also aspects about the business usage of the internet by these different actors. We also take pains to look at the government role in promoting ICT usage in the economy and also government's own usage of ICT. Over the last 10 years, the Global Information Technology Report and the Network Readiness Index Framework have provided a very sound foundation for leaders in both public and private sector to think about technology. But at the same time, over the last 10 years, technology has evolved. Technology has become much more ubiquitous, much more present in almost every aspect of life and business society. Technology also has blurred the boundaries across conventional sectors. Today, the boundaries between media, entertainment, education, technology, telecoms, software, all getting blurred. And at the same time, what we are seeing is technology is having a very fundamental impact in terms of how it impacts people's lives, how it changes innovation models and businesses, and how it also affects the engagement between governments and societies. So what we have done for this year is we have introduced a new pillar in the Network Readiness Index pillar in the framework that assesses and focuses on the impact dimension. So now in the new framework, in the modified framework, we have, of course, the environmental aspects, but we also have the readiness, usage, and the impact of the three most important actors, the individuals, businesses, and governments.
Now we hear from Bill Davidson. He's the Vice President of Global Marketing and Investor Relations at Qualcomm, a world leader in 3G and next-generation mobile technologies. He tells us why this report is relevant to his industry.
You know, if you look, the real relevance of the Global IT Report is it provides a foundation for measurement between, you know, more than 100 countries of the progress in getting broadband deployed. And we've seen direct correlation that when people have access to the internet and to communications, that there's a benefit to GDP growth. So critically important that we measure that and make sure that we're making progress, especially in emerging regions. To us specifically, you know, one of the things that we really wanted to see In 2010, mobile broadband subscriptions actually surpassed fixed broadband connections in the world. And in fact, in the emerging markets, we believe fundamentally that's how people will gain access to the internet. And so while the report's obviously been very useful to date, we think that that trend was a key tipping point in how we need to measure broadband penetration. So for us in the wireless industry, we're very happy that the forum has decided to include mobile broadband now as one of the measurement criteria in the report, in addition to fixed that they've been measuring for some time. I mean, the use to us is that we're looking at, mobile voice has become the largest technology platform in human history. We actually think mobile broadband will have far more impact, and it's not just about accessing the internet. There are really, even just two key areas, healthcare and education. And again, in emerging markets, it'll enable people to take control of their healthcare and provide access where it hasn't been before. And in education, we'll be able to reach people that don't have the benefit of going to a classroom every day. That's important to us and to Qualcomm specifically. We're trying to enable wireless connectivity in virtually every piece of consumer electronics equipment and now even medical equipment, because we think those devices will be more valuable. So measuring that and then also measuring the impact of that and benchmarking country to country, I think will actually spur adoption faster. I fundamentally believe that people's behavior country to country actually isn't that different, even though sometimes we think it is. But the types of things or the type of information that people want access to globally really isn't very different. And so, for us, I think being able to measure and look at the countries that are moving ahead very rapidly with broadband deployment and looking for opportunities to help grow businesses within those countries. Application developers can then take advantage of those broadband networks and generate income within the country. We have great success stories in our wireless reach programs of people creating new businesses and microfinance opportunities when broadband is deployed. So it absolutely will help us focus our efforts in those areas as well. I believe in Southeast Asia, originally there were women that would get set up with a kit to enable them to have a phone and sell minutes so that people could share that device and they could make phone calls. But then as everybody got a cell phone, that program shifted over to selling data, selling kilobytes and being able to access data. And every one of those kits that was deployed, and again, largely female entrepreneurs, every one of them is profitable. And so they've created this new business opportunity for themselves by taking that kit and having the microfinance opportunity on selling minutes or selling kilobytes of data for people to use.
And now we hear from Per Ola Karlsson. He's the managing director for Europe for Boz & Company, a management consulting firm. And he shares his thoughts on the report.
Well, I think we've all seen the tremendous impact of digital technologies that have taken place over the last 10 years. It's really fundamentally changed how businesses, how government, and how consumers interact and behave. For instance, we can just look at the impact social media had on the developments in Northern Africa over the last year. Or we can look at companies like and sites like TripAdvisor, which currently has more than 50 million consumer reviews that track and influence consumer behavior. The GITR has really been very helpful in putting some perspective around these developments and helping to decode, if you will, what's happening for business leaders and government leaders. What we see is that the insights coming from GITR, either in the Networked Readiness Index or in the many perspectives from some of the world's leading thinkers around technology. So the GITR has really helped put into perspective these developments, both through the Networked Readiness Index, but also through many of the perspectives that have been shared by some of the leading thinkers on technology issues. So I'm really convinced that the GITR has been able to provide real value to leaders across the world in different areas. So I think what we're seeing happening right now are three different forces coming together that's really driving the development in many businesses, but also in government. Right? The first one is that consumers have really learned to adopt these technologies and are frankly craving for them. It's enough if you look at, you know, your children, right? The whole younger generation. But frankly, also when I look at my parents and see how they are as well beginning to adopt these technologies in their way of doing business or finding things that are important for them. So the consumer demand angle is really there. The second thing that we've seen really happen is that technology is really becoming pervasive, and it's finding its way into most every area you can imagine. And so the strong technology push is creating opportunities that weren't there really before. And then the third thing that we're seeing is that the economic value is finally getting realized by businesses. And this realization is making them make some choices in how they set up their processes, how they choose to interact with customers, how they benefit from the enormous amount of data and information that they have around their customers and their buying practices. And so with the convergence of these three forces, what we're seeing is really a revolution in how businesses will go about what they're doing, but also how governmental institutions will be interacting with their constituents and doing their business. So, you know, some practical examples of what's really happening out there. If you take many governments, and frankly also governments in some of the emerging markets, they're really embracing e-government as a way of interacting with their citizens. For instance, Abu Dhabi, just to mention one example, has really thought through a pretty expansive way of improving the interaction and making it very efficient and, if you will, citizen-friendly through many of the developments we've seen taking place there. If you go to the business world, well, if frankly, any business who is active in the consumer space are nowadays mining the data they have around their consumers, their preferences, their shopping behaviors, to find new ways of marketing their products and going to market in much more efficient and effective ways.
And finally, this Saturday, April 7th, it is World Health Day, and this year's theme is aging and health. We discussed the inevitable with Dr. Olivier Renaud. He's the Senior Director and Head of Global Health and Healthcare Industries here at the World Economic Forum.
It should be clear that the forum looks at aging as a risk. That is to say, the increasing aging population, the increasing part of the old population is a risk if not managed properly. Managing it properly means making sure that this aging population stays healthy, active, and independent, and I will come back to this.
So a lot of people are discussing the fact that we have more older people than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
How does that impact?
Well, the impact is manifold. First of all, in terms of population, you have in cities an increasing part of the population which is old. The second is that in terms of economy, this increasing part of the non-active population is putting a heavy burden on all of the pension and health care system. Therefore, the need for us to look at this as an issue of urbanization. How do we organize cities so they are elderly friendly? The second is, how do we rethink of pension scheme so they integrate the fact that the life expectancy has increased dramatically? And third, in terms of health system, not only funding for those diseases that occur later in the life, but trying to keep people healthy and longer is the right way to approach it.
Now, you kind of brought up this term active aging. Tell me a little bit about that.
Active means economically active and physically active. Economically means there is an untapped potential in terms of integrating all of the elderly part of the workforce into active contributors to the economy. And there is good evidence that shows that maintaining elderly people integrated in the economy is not only an interesting thing, that is to say, making them consumer, but also keeping them part of the community. The second part of it is physically active. You know, osteoporosis, for example. One of the risk factors for osteoporosis is a lack of physical activity. The more you exercise, the stronger your bones will be, not only your muscles. So this to illustrate the fact that being physically active, which is also what is going to make you financially independent and physically independent.
It is. I mean, if you're going to live till about 90, you would wish that you were in good shape to be able to contribute still.
I think we all dream of this, living. I think, as a person, I don't wish I will live till the age of 110.
If I'm healthy, why not?
Well, if healthy, yes. Well, but I would rather die at the age of 95 or 90, being very healthy and active the day before I die, than living 10 additional years of poor quality life with chronic disease, becoming dependent, becoming... No. I mean, we probably all have this same dream. Now, how to turn this into a real concrete action is probably more difficult, but we have to accept that this is probably what is scientifically called the square life expectancy pattern, is that instead of having a slow degradation of your quality of life and then you die, is you live a healthy and active life and then you die.
That would be ideal. We'll bring it up again. What do you need to do to stay healthy? I think most people know, but it never hurts to say it again.
Right. The first thing you need to realize is that it's not a health issue. So therefore, you should not trust your doctor. You should not trust that drugs or devices or medical devices or health insurance will fix it. The responsibility and the accountability to be healthy and stay healthy is very much about yourself, your behavior, what you eat, the way you exercise, if you smoke, but not, if you drink, with moderation. All of this is going to be the key determinants of what is making you healthy. So you don't need a doctor, you don't need a big pharma, you don't need a health insurance to do all of this adequately. You are in the driver's seat. The second thing is that the environment very much is going to have an impact. As you say, of course, air, water, but also infrastructure. The ability of people to exercise, to have physical activity, is very much dependent on infrastructure, on building safe places where people can walk, can bicycle. And this is more and more under the responsibility of urban planners. So here again, no doctor, no pharma, no scientific research, but very much organizing the life. And the last element I would like to emphasize is the workplace. The workplace is where 54% of people in this world are going to spend about 45 years. That is to say, 54% of the people living on this planet are employees. And if the workplace is used as a place where you have healthy food, where you have the opportunity to do healthy physical activity, it is not only non-smoking and smoke-free, but it is helping you to quit smoking if you eventually are a smoker. It is a place where you learn about healthy diet. So not only have you healthy food at the cafeteria, but being also aware of what is a healthy diet. That is changing a lot. The beauty of this is that there is a strong economic incentive for employers to do this. That is to say, any dollar invested in a healthy workplace comes as a return in terms of productivity, in terms of employee moral loyalty, at least threefold.
And finally, I think we're talking most of these about the Western world. Now, here we're doing quite well. How about other regions? Life expectancy, not so high there. How can
the rest of the world kind of aid in increasing life expectancy and quality of aging in these other regions?
Very important. Increase in elderly population is going to be massively in the developing world. It's not in the developed world where life expectancy has already increased a lot and where this trend is going to continue, but the dramatic change is going to happen in the emerging world, in sub-Saharan Africa, in India. And these are places that are not at all prepared for this. Social system do not exist. Culturally, these countries are not prepared also. The urbanization that we have experienced in most of the Western, Northern Hemisphere and Western world is going to happen, but at a much faster pace in all of these countries. So being prepared and preparing for the aging of the population is a phenomenal priority, especially in the emerging world.
So life expectancies are expecting to go up there as well?
Yes, dramatically. As a result of many improvements in access to nutrition, clean water, improvement of living conditions. It's a problem if not managed properly. It's an opportunity if we do the right thing. But the opportunity is now, and I'd like to bring maybe a sense of urgency here, is that even though it may appear as a slow phenomenon, aging of the population is happening at a very, very fast pace in terms of societal impact. And probably there are decisions that need to be taken today that are going to be tougher to be made if made tomorrow after tomorrow. So there is a huge responsibility for today's leader to prepare for this.
And that's it for this week's edition of Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler. Thanks for listening.